Our passage this morning is from Mark's Gospel, chapter 6, beginning there in verse 30. There is something that I found in short supply in this world, which is compassion. It seems that even for conservative, confessing evangelicals, they have lost their compassion. It seems that it's all about truth, but there's very little compassion in the truth. It seems like churches in general have forgotten that God is a God of compassion, and that He is a God that deals with His people compassionately. Now, the compassion of God is, of course, in harmony with all His other attributes, especially His attributes of loving kindness and truth. Compassion, dear brothers and sisters, is what our world needs. And churches too, I think, can do with a good dose of compassion. Not just heartfelt words, not just sympathy, but Christ-like compassion. The compassion of Christ abounds in loving kindness and truth. You see, Jesus drew people to Him. Not only was He known to be a truthful man, but He was also known to be a compassionate man. And today's message will come from the life of Jesus, which will demonstrate Him to be abounding in loving kindness and truth. It will also show Him to be like a shepherd, a good shepherd, which acts compassionately towards His sheep. And hence the title of today's message, Jesus, Our Compassionate Shepherd. Jesus, Our Compassionate Shepherd. You see, what our passage will show this morning, and it will challenge each one of us, that feeling sorry for somebody or express a word of sympathy is one thing, but being compassionate towards somebody is a different thing. What we are called to do is to imitate the compassion of Christ. Colossians 3:12 says, "As chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion." In all of the gospel, Jesus has a heart of compassion. He is truthful, He is faithful, but He is compassionate. We must remember that compassion without truth is not being compassionate. Why? Because it takes not into consideration eternity, salvation, and sanctification. So compassion without truth is indeed harmful. The inverse is true. Truth without compassion, James says, is fruitless and worthless. And so, my dear brothers and sisters, this morning you're going to be challenged by Jesus to be compassionate like Him. We will learn from Him today that He is a shepherd, not just any shepherd, but the compassionate shepherd. And we will indeed walk out here this morning on our minds to clothe ourselves with a heart of compassion, as Colossians 3:12 says. But first, I'm going to give you three things you can learn here from Jesus about compassion. Three things you can learn from Jesus about His compassion. The compassion of Christ always assesses the needs of people. His compassion always assesses the needs of people. Secondly, Christ's compassion always acts upon the needs of people. Christ's compassion always acts upon the needs of people. And then finally, Christ's compassion always abounds in providing for the needs of people. It always abounds. Let's begin with the compassion of Jesus and how He assesses the needs of people. He's very good at assessing the needs of people. Look at verse 30 and 31. It says there, the apostles gathered together with Jesus, and they reported to him all that they had done and taught. They just came back from being sent out by Jesus to be missionaries to the surrounding communities. And verse 31, they said, he said to them, come away by yourselves to a secluded place and rest for a while. You see, Jesus assesses the needs of his disciples. They are tired. They worked hard. The crowds are overwhelming them. They're busy with ministry, and Jesus assesses his disciples to be tired. Not only were they tired, but he also assessed that they weren't able to eat. And so they must have been very hungry. You see, Jesus has his radars up for people. Jesus keeps in touch with the needs of people, and especially here, his disciples. He has his radars up for their needs and for their struggles. And so Jesus says, come with me so you can rest a while. So they hop on a boat, cruise, and they sail across the Lake of Galilee. They wanted to escape to what Jesus referred to as a secluded place. And they went to this secluded place by themselves, breaking the crowds. And lo and behold, in verse 33, the crowds are waiting there for them. When they needed, what they needed was a retreat from the crowds. And Jesus led them to a secluded place. But when they got there, they had little time for rest and revival because the crowds were waiting there for them. Verse 34. And when Jesus went ashore, he saw a large crowd. And here too, Jesus quickly assesses the situation and he determines the needs of the crowds. He quickly determines the needs of the crowds. If this was me, wanting to take a break, trying to escape the crowds, I would have got back in the boat and rowed to a different place. So I would have said, look, folks, we came out here for a little R&R. Could you come back maybe next week? Schedule an appointment. But Jesus, like God, is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger, abounding in loving kindness and grace. He felt compassion for them. Jesus felt compassion for them, for they were like sheep without a shepherd. Do you see how quickly Jesus assesses the situation? They were like sheep without a shepherd. What Jesus sensed before him were people who had struggles and sufferings. They were distressed and dispirited like sheep without a shepherd. The response of Jesus is most gracious. He felt compassion. Now that Greek word here describes the spleen, which basically said that Jesus was emotionally touched by what he saw. You can say what Jesus felt was gut-wrenching. Hence, the King James translates that very same word in Colossians 3:16, put on bowels of compassion. Basically, what is churning inside Jesus is this heartfelt sympathy, compassion for what he is seeing. Imagine yourself for a moment being in a place like Ethiopia or southern Sudan, where there is famine. And you see little kids, little two-year-olds, emaciated. Wouldn't that stir up compassion? Wouldn't that be somewhat gut-wrenching to see a little child starving to death, neglected, maybe abandoned by his parents? That would be gut-wrenching, wouldn't that? We even look at those TV commercials of the Humane Society and we see animals neglected and abandoned by their owners, and we somehow get angry at that. It touches us when we see a horse or a dog or a cat abandoned by its owner, having no source of food or water. That touches us. What touches Jesus here is the condition of the sheep. He's deeply touched, for they have been abandoned by their shepherds. They were sheep without a shepherd. They were distressed, dispirited, and directionless, for their shepherds have abandoned them. You see, the people standing before Jesus were ignorant, they were confused, and they were helpless like sheep. They lacked meaning and purpose and direction in their lives, and Jesus felt compassionate towards them. Indeed, what Jesus saw before him was the flock of Israel in a dry valley, left to fend for themselves, abandoned to the wolves. What Jesus sees here is what Ezekiel 34 laments. When the shepherds of Israel were not good at assessing the needs of the sheep, the Lord says to Ezekiel, "Woe, shepherds of Israel, who have been feeding themselves. Should not the shepherds feed the flock?" You see, the shepherds of Israel at that time weren't in touch with the needs of the sheep, neither were they touched by the needs of the sheep. Hence, we got to learn here from Jesus, who has his radars up, assessing, always assessing the needs of the people. Hear what Philippians 2 says. Philippians 2 says, "If any affection or compassion make my joy complete, do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others." You see, we're good in a daily basis, minute by minute, assessing how am I doing. Do I have enough food here? Do I have enough reserves here for later? Am I comfortable? What's the temperature in here? Is it right? We keep on assessing our needs, but Jesus assesses the needs of other people. And what he sees stirs up compassion. But dear brothers and sisters, it is one thing to feel compassion. It is another thing to act compassionately. It's a different thing to act with compassion, and that's the second thing you will see here in our passage, is that Jesus acts with compassion. Jesus acts with compassion, firstly addressing the spiritual needs and then the physical needs. The spiritually emaciated sheep will no longer be neglected, for Jesus will immediately begin to address their malnutrition. Look at verse 34. It says there, "When Jesus went ashore, he saw a large crowd, and he felt compassion for them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things." You see, when we see people who are malnourished and starved, our reaction is to give them food, give them snacks, give them a Pop-Tart, give them something, right? But Jesus begins to teach. He begins to preach and teach the Word of God. He unfolds the truth of God. He does not bring them mere words of human wisdom, neither is he telling them uplifting stories and anecdotes to make them feel better about their situation. But as Dr. Joe MacArthur rightly notes, he says, and so he, of course, the great shepherd, the only true shepherd, began to teach them many things. Teaching that would cleanse them, teaching that would feed them, teaching that would protect them, teaching that would lead them to the eternal safety of his fold. There was no place and no time in Jesus' schedule for anecdotes and philosophies that are like food that perishes. But Jesus says we are to buy the food that endures to eternal life. Jesus will begin to feed them bread, but not the baker's bread, but the heavenly bread. He will clearly show them that man shall not live by bread alone, but every word that issues from the mouth of God. He began to teach them many things. That's the first thing he does. And here, dear brothers and sisters, I think there's some things for us to consider. I think the first thing is, how do we feel about someone's spiritual state? You see, often you see somebody, they distressed, they dispirited, and does it do something for us? Are we touched? Are we good at assessing where people are spiritually? Do we take the time to inquire where they are spiritually? And does it touch us deeply when we find that someone is without hope and that they are not in the sheepfold of God's people? Does that do something for us? Let me tell you, it does everything for Jesus. It's gut-wrenching for Jesus to see someone who is not saved. And so, dear brothers and sisters, I think we have to consider, in showing compassion to people, that we stop giving these anecdotal stories or these words of wisdom or these little things we see on Facebook, you know, this happy story that has no real eternal benefits. We got to get down to what is important, and that is addressing the spiritual needs of people. And how we address the spiritual needs of people is we teach them the Word of God. However, the Bible is very clear, too, is that we can't just address spiritual needs because man is body and spirit. We have to address both the body and the spirit needs to be fed. Isn't that what James 2:16 says? That if your brother or sister is without clothing and in need of daily food, and one of you says to him, go in peace, be warmed, and be filled, and yet you do not give them what is necessary for their body, what use is it? Don't preach to them, feed them. Or shall I say, don't just preach to them, but feed them. Whereas James poignantly points out, what good does it do when we give them cold comfort? I'll pray for you. I'll think of you this week. To minister spiritual truth to people is eternally important, but ministering to someone's physical needs is vitally important too. Or else it would be like James says, what good does it do? We cannot do the one and not the other, and that is why 1 John 3:17 says, but whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? If we see a brother in need, whether it's a spiritual need or a physical need, and we close our hearts against them, how does the love of God abide in us? Because the love of God pushes us to be compassionate and truthful, just like God. And so Jesus, being the compassionate shepherd he is, shows care and concern and will act upon the physical needs of the people. Look at verses 35 to 36. And when it was already quite late, his disciples came to him and said, "This place is desolate and it's already quite late. Send them away." I love it. They just order Jesus. Send them away so that they may go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. I'm sure the disciples were like, "Oh, I wonder how long Jesus is going to keep on teaching here. I mean, it's getting late and we are really hungry. We are starving here." And so Jesus, it's time for you to send them away so that they can get themselves food. But I just love how Jesus responds. "You give them something to eat." I love the compassion of Jesus here. Somehow, we could say, well, the disciples are concerned here for the crowds. And they were accurately able to assess the physical needs. They couldn't assess the spiritual needs. They would have known the difference. But they were reluctant to even address the physical needs. Look how they're passing the buck. Jesus, you send them away so that they can go find themselves food. And Jesus says, "No, you're going to feed them." I wonder if Jesus is not trying to teach them something here. I wonder if Jesus is maybe not thinking of what will later become Romans 12, verses 12 to 13. "Rejoicing in hope, persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer, contributing to the needs of the saints, practicing hospitality." Like a good shepherd, Jesus will contribute to the needs of the saints and he will practice hospitality. He will not allow the crowds to leave and to find food for themselves because, like a shepherd, we'll need to show his sheep where to eat. And like a shepherd, a good shepherd will provide for the needs of his sheep. He will feed his flock. He will demonstrate what he's expecting his disciples to do. In the closing chapters of John's Gospel in John 21, Jesus asks Peter, he says, "Do you love me?" He says, "You know I love you. Feed my sheep." And then he says, Peter again, he says, "Do you love me?" "Yeah, of course I love you." "Well, feed my sheep." And then he says again, "Do you love me? Feed my sheep." What Jesus wants to cultivate in his disciples are people who act like shepherds, people who show compassion on the sheep of God's flock. Dear brothers and sisters, no animal is more dependent on a caretaker than sheep. I grew up in a country in South Africa where sheep were all around us. And sheep are very different than cattle. You see, cattle you can let go and they will find food. Am I right here? You can just let them go and they will figure it out. Sheep, to the contrary, they don't figure it out. You have to take them. You almost take them and say, "Look, here's no food left here." Yeah, it's not going to just fall out of the air. And then, so you got to take them to where there's green pastures. They have no instinct. They have no sense of direction. They need guidance. They need someone to lead them into the green pastures. They need to be led and they need to be fed by the shepherd. Verse 37. The disciples are somewhat reluctant. They want to pass the buck. We look at their response there in verse 37. "Shall we go and spend 200 denarii on bread and give them something to eat?" I don't think it's a matter of inability. I think it is a matter of not wanting to take a responsibility. They are finding one more excuse not to be feeding the crowd. They want, Jesus, don't make it as our problem. It's going to cost a lot of money. I think the statement of the disciples reveal not the sheer impossibility of the task, but rather a matter of reluctance, of shunning responsibility. But Jesus is teaching them something here about feeding the flock of God's people. And Jesus will now demonstrate how to be a compassionate shepherd. As always, Jesus knows what he is doing, and in his doing, he is teaching. He is teaching something here about the duty and the delight of being compassionate and acting with compassion. There are several spiritual lessons woven in here. Let me read for you verse 38. And he said to them, "How many loaves do you have? Go look." And they found out, and they said, 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And then Jesus does something that only the good shepherd does. We all know Psalm 23. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures." What is the end of verse 38 say? "He commanded all to sit down by groups on the green grass." In fact, that word "sit down" is where we get the English word "recline" from. He had them lay down in green grass. They sat down, they reclined in groups, and he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking upward to heaven, he blessed the food and broke the loaves, and he kept giving. He kept giving. He kept giving them to the disciples to sit before them, and he divided up the 2 fish among them all. They all ate, and they were satisfied. I just love it. The compassion of Jesus abounds. And that's the third thing we can learn here, is when Jesus acts with compassion, he is not stingy, he is not miserly, but it abounds. They're surplus. And they picked up 12 full baskets of broken pieces and also the fish. There were 5,000 men who ate the loaves. And Jesus, like the good shepherd of the 23rd Psalm, had them lay down in green pastures, and he fed them. They ate, and they were satisfied. Not only did they eat of the baker's bread, but they ate of the heavenly bread. They were physically and spiritually satisfied. There is no half-baked effort here with Jesus. Everything he does with abundance, with surplus, with zeal, with passion. Does the psalmist not say in the 23rd Psalm, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want"? It means you satisfy. I don't need anything more. I got everything. Does the 23rd Psalm not say, "The Lord is my shepherd, my cup overflows"? Interesting, Jesus provides them bread and fish, but he doesn't provide them water. There's nothing said about somebody providing water here. Can I speculate here for a moment? If I read the 23rd Psalm, it says, "He leads me beside quiet waters." I wonder if he didn't lay them down in green pastures where there is quiet waters. But that is just speculation on my part, so don't go take me up on that. I don't have a map or a Google picture of where they sat, but if he's acting like the good shepherd, he takes care of all our needs. Feeding them the bread of heaven and feeding them the bread of the baker. Nevertheless, they all ate and they were all satisfied. Now, dear brothers and sisters, we've been walking through Romans 12. Love is without hypocrisy. And then in verse 13, it builds upon that and it says, contributing to the needs of the saints, practicing hospitality. If our compassion is to contribute to the needs of the saints, we mean we have to assess the needs of the saints. We need to figure out how the saints are doing. And then we practice hospitality and we provide for their needs as best as we can. But I do sense if we want to follow the example of the Good Shepherd, there is a sense of generosity, liberality, and abundance. Did Jesus not contribute to the needs of the saints here? Did he not minister to their souls and to their bodies? Did he not show warm hospitality in abundance here? Just like the psalmist says, surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all of my life. However way we look at this, everyone who left there had the sense of satisfaction. Now, let's wrap this up. Where did this all begin? Where did this all begin? It all began in verse 31. And he said to them, come away by yourselves to a secluded place and rest for a while, for there were many people coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat. Rest for the soul, food for the body. Isn't that what we term a vacation? Even a staycation. Lock the doors, draw the blinds, turn up the TV, popcorn, rest for the soul, food for the body. But it's been go, go, go here for the disciples. Go, go, go. They come, there's crowds waiting. Crowds with needs. Crowds with struggles. Shall we ask the question? Did the disciples find rest for their souls and food for their bodies? I wonder if Jesus would have dismissed them if they were worn out and spent after a day's ministry. I mean, they were spent. They just came back from a missionary trip. They didn't have time to eat even when they came home. Jesus says, he promises, I'm going to take you to a secluded place where you can rest for a while. Well, it was a secluded place. The only difference is there were people there. But rest, they will rest. They will be restored because this is the psalmist not say, the Lord is my shepherd. He restores my soul. Dear brothers and sisters, I will never forget this. We were on vacation in Santa Barbara. We were tired. We were tired of endless streams of counseling and marriage interventions and things like that. And here my wife and I, we just sit there in this little shopping area with nice, expensive stores and restaurants, and our kids were playing there in a fountain, and we were just sitting there on a bench, my wife and I. And somehow there was a sign dropped down from heaven that says, free counseling. share your problems, pastor couple. And this lady just comes and squeezes in next to us. I'm like, this is getting uncomfortable. And she saw it pouring out her life to us. And I thought, what does this lady want? What does she want? Does she want money? And it became evident she doesn't want money. She didn't want somebody to take care of her. And I'm like, we're on vacation, God. We just wanted to get away from this and rest. And dear brothers and sisters, there were, I think, maybe an hour or two of counseling. We prayed with her and she went her way somewhat revived. Guess what? We returned home restored. We cannot outgive what God gives. These disciples had to give up on themselves. But they found their strength not drained, but their strength restored. And so, my dear brothers and sisters, I don't believe that Jesus sent these disciples away after a long day of ministry, spent and worn out, but he sent them away revived. He restored their souls. To the contrary, Jesus was spent. Look at verse 48. If there was someone who was physically fatigued and worn out, he says there, after bidding them farewell, he left for the mountain to pray.